bumps into Proverbs chapter 31. You remember where we were? It's been a way long time ago since I've had a Sunday night. And Proverbs chapter 31, we were actually looking at sayings that your mother told you. Remember how we started? This was the introduction to Proverbs chapter 31. Believe it or not, this is still the continuation of our family study. And in Proverbs chapter 31, what we have very uniquely is a mother speaking to her son. Now, it's Solomon's mother, and she's telling him what she feels like he needs to know. It's likely, in fact, probable at this point that Solomon is an adult man. He's probably already the king as we're looking at the timing of this. So it's not like he's a little kid being told this advice. He is, you know, a grown man hearing the advice of his mother. We talked about, I'm going to try to bring you back up to date a little bit, about how important a mother's advice is. The saying, I can't remember who is given credit for this saying, but it's been around for a long time, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the nation, right? You know what I mean? And there is some real truth to that. The most impactful people on our lives are our mom and our dad. And mom, from the time that we are born to the time we're 18, will spend 3 or 4 times as much time with us as dad. So while dad has a great influence, you just can't beat the influence of time. You just really can't. It's an incredible amount of influence that a mother wields. And so what we want to do is look at the advice that Solomon's mother is giving to him. And we're not going to get very far in this. We just got to the first verse last time we looked at it. Hopefully we'll get down to about verse 7 or 8. Let's take a look at verse 2. What, my son? And what, the son of my womb? And what, the son of my vows? And then she's like, hello, I just want you to know who you are. My son that I gave birth to. My son that I have promised to watch over you and to teach you and to guide you. This is who I'm talking to. She wants to make sure that he understands who he is in her eyes. Every mother knows what we're talking about here. You know, and what she's about to say is because the one that she loves and has committed her life to needs what she's about to say. That's how important this is. He's not just somebody. You remember the old, it's often shared at Mother's Day. You know, this mom's gone for a few hours and she comes home and she finds a note written by Johnny on the table. I'm going to mess this all up because I wasn't planning on doing this. It just popped in my brain. And Johnny says, doing the dishes, $1. Vacuuming the floor, 50 cents. Mowing the lawn, $2. Making my bed, 25 cents. Scratch and total. Mom, coming home and finding the note, writes beside there, staying up for all hours, rocking you when you were sick, nothing. Feeding you and taking care of you, nothing. Putting myself at the very edge of death just to bring you into this world, nothing. That's the love of a mother, right? That's something you don't overlook. And that's who is writing. So as you're imagining this, imagine what your mom would be saying and how she would say. This is the advice of Solomon's mother, because this is the son of her womb, the son of her vows, the son that she loves so dearly. And that advice is going to be very important. Let's go on. Verse 3. Give, it says. It says, give not thy strength unto women. Stop there for a minute. This is not a sexist statement. Do you understand? It is not. What does God expect from men? Lead. Period. This is not sexist for God to ask men to lead. This is God's protection of the woman. God refers to that woman and Peter as the weaker vessel, and that is not a sexist statement. It is not intended to be a belittling of the woman. It is a cherished vessel. It is something that cannot be replaced vessel. That's that weaker vessel. It is delicate. It's fine china. And we're supposed to look out for her as if She is someone, guys, who cannot be replaced. And God then anticipates that we would be leaders. And it messes up society when we get this out of balance. It does. It messes up homes. It creates a circumstance where, like we have in our country now, where kids, boys, 10, 12, 13, 15 years old, don't know what gender they're supposed to be. It messes up society when men surrender their God-given responsibility to women. Now, I'm aware in this passage that it also is talking about sexual things. I'm well aware that it's saying, guys, quit being led around by the nose because, you know, you're just caught up with every infatuation. Read Proverbs chapter 7 again and find that brutish young person who is someplace where they shouldn't be, when they shouldn't be, at a time they should, you know, et cetera, with people they shouldn't be. And she leads him down the ways of death. Remember that in Proverbs chapter 7? I'm well aware that it's talking about that, but it's beyond that. Her statement is, don't surrender yourself to women and all that God has given you as a man. Now, ladies, can I say this? This is a refreshing thing to see that this woman was not offended by that concept, but instead was teaching that concept to her son. Do you know where your sons are going to learn how to treat women? Watching mom and dad. That's where they're going to learn it. And you're going to teach them a lot, ladies. You are. And here she is, and she's saying, give not yourself to women. But let's keep reading, because that's not going to be the focus of what we're looking at tonight. Nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. Hey, Solomon, you're a king. Don't yield yourself to foolishness. And now what she's going to do is start on a list of things to be aware of, to be careful with. And it's going to end, of course, with the ultimate of who can find a virtuous woman, right? Because the woman that your son marries is going to make all the difference in the world. Amen? Says the father whose son is engaged to be married, right? I am aware of what this responsibility is. And so there's going to end with that, but that's not where she starts. Let's start in verse 4 and see where she starts. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink, lest they drink and forget the law and pervert the judgment of any of the afflicted. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish, and wine to those that are of heavy hearts. Let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his misery no more. But it is not for kings. Hey, listen, if you're going to say to me, well, pastor, you know, I guess it's okay for me to drink, I'm going to say, then two things have to be true about you. You're ready to die, or something has happened so badly that you need to see a psychologist and be medicated. That's what's being spoken of here, right? I can't handle life. Give drink to the person who admittedly says, I'm weak and anemic and I can't handle life, or to that person who's ready to die. And everybody else, pay attention. We are in this society now when in our churches, you know, one of the biggest things on our college campuses right now, and I'm talking about our independent, fundamental, Bible-believing Baptist college campuses, is the debate over whether or not Christians should drink wine. And let me read this to you again. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for the princes, the sons of the children of the king, O Lemuel, to drink wine. Do you understand? It is not, unless you are ready to die. The caveat is that, okay, you know what? You might need some medication to get you through this because you're about to die. And rather than writhe in pain, we're going to give you sodium pentothal. No, that's truth serum. We're going to give you, what do they give? What's something good for pain? I don't know. I don't take medicine. There you go. Take that. I don't know. I don't take pain medicine. Tylenol. Take some Tylenol. I don't want to take. You know? I mean, unless you're ready to die. I mean, God's saying, listen, this is an important thing. And I want to make sure that everybody knows where Southeast Baptist stands, where your pastor stands, and where God thinks you should stand. There's no room here for fudging. You say, well, I know a lot of people who drink and they're good Christians. Okay, that's an oxymoron. That's like saying, I know a lot of people who drink and they kill. I've only killed one person. How'd you like to have that for your neighbor? Well, I've only killed one person. That's so much better than the guy who's killed four, I guess. I don't know what to tell you, but no, this isn't the way it works. It is not for kings, O Lemuel. And I want to just walk you through real quickly a study on this from the scripture. Can we do this? I want you to know that I'm not talking. You say, Pastor, there are so many passages that talk about drinking wine and good things about drinking wine. I'm well aware. I'm going to tell you right up front that there are probably as many or more passages that say something about so-and-so drank wine and God doesn't say anything. Jesus turned water into wine. And I'm going to say to you that any water that Jesus turns into wine for you, feel free to drink. You get it? Feel free to drink it. The rest of it, stay away from. Here's what I absolutely know. That I name for me one person who's a better father because they drink. You can't name one, but I can name thousands who are lousy fathers because they drink. Name for me one person who's a better husband because he drinks. What would you think if I said, your pastor, well, you know, I just take one drink on Sunday mornings because I need something to keep me focused in the pulpit. Name me one person who's a better pastor because they drink. And I will name you 1,000 who are lousy pastors because they drink. It's not there. You're not going to find it. They don't exist. And yet we still have this crazy thing of saying, well, somehow we want to defend it. The Bible does. Okay, we can get into all the ins and outs about this kind of thing, but you just do the study yourself. Google fermentation and find out what you find out. Do you know that they weren't even able to produce drinkable fermented wine very well until about the 800s. I mean, 800 years after the New Testament was written. Because you know what happens if you leave? What happens if you leave grape juice or apple juice sitting in the refrigerator too long? Do you get wine? No, what do you get? Vinegar. That's what you get. Oh, that's always fun to drink. It was nasty. It was nasty. And the strong drink of the Old Testament is that kind of vinegar that has created more and more of an alcohol content the longer it sits. It's not even the stuff that fermentation brings about, which is even worse as far as the alcohol content. But that's not what's being spoken of as this wine in the Bible. The wine of the Bible, quite literally, you can do your own study, but it quite literally is what you and I call grape juice. It's the way it was made. Look at it. You can still to this day go back and find, not in the Bible, but find ancient recipes for making wine. And you know what they did? They smashed up grapes. That's what they did. But let me tell you what the Bible teaches us about wine. Listen to it real quickly. I got to rush through these things. Can you tell that this has just gotten me a little bit stirred up? I thought, you know, this is a good thing, good time to talk about it because I'm tired of listening to people argue about it. And people, I don't say attack, but people, maybe even after tonight, will come to me with their Bibles open and show me 50 verses. Well, explain this one, Pastor. Explain this one. I don't have anything to explain. You're the one that has to explain. Explain this. How about this? They that eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence are condemned by God. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is, what's the next word, you know? Deceived thereby is not wise. Okay, so if you want to say to me, well, Pastor, I'm not wise, which is another way of saying I am brutish. We've got kids, I always forget in here on Sunday nights that that word. I am that. Okay, then there you go. That's what you're saying. Now listen up. He that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man, and he that loveth wine shall not be rich. Surrender all your wealth to it. There you go. He shall separate himself. Listen to what the Bible says in Numbers chapter 6, talking about God's people. He shall separate himself from wine and strong drink. He shall drink no vinegar of wine, no vinegar of strong drink. Oh, you mean God understood it was vinegar back then? Yes, he did. Neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried grapes. Wow, I mean, God was really drawing a tight line for these people. Now, therefore, beware, I pray thee. Drink not wine, nor strong drink. Eat not anything unclean. So God puts wine and strong drink in the same category as pigs and unclean things for the children of Israel. Woe unto them who rise up early in the morning, that they may follow after strong drink, that continue until night, till wine inflame them. Woe unto them. The next verse, not the next verse, but 11 verses later. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine, and men of strength to mingle strong drink. Woe. Isaiah says, but they have erred through wine. Now here's where we are, the church in America, 21st century. But they have erred through wine. If we think our churches are weak now, what do you think the church is going to look like after 20 years of embracing wine bibbing? Can you imagine? They have erred. Listen to what it says. Through wine and through strong drink. And through strong drink are out of the way. The priests and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment, the ability to reason and to think. This is what, I mean, everybody will tell you, this is what wine does to you. Have you not been, when's the last time you went to a driver's ed course? In a driver's ed course, still today, because my kids just went through it recently. You know what they tell you? How many drinks does it take for that alcohol to impair your judgment on the road? One. One, I can handle my liquor. Well, you're a lot of other things I can think of too that aren't very smart. One impairs your judgment. How about this way? Your son is laying dying on the side of the road because the guy who hit him had one drink. How do you feel about that guy? Just one. Just one. They have erred through wine and their judgment. And when you put that into priests and you put that into leadership and you put that into presidents, you get the mess that we're in. That's what happens. They have erred through it. Listen up. It says, if a man, I love this one. This is Micah chapter 2. If a man walking in the spirit and falsehood do lie, saying, I will prophesy unto thee of wine and strong drink. God is giving a warning. That even if a man of God stands up and says, it's okay, please know, it's a lie and a falsehood. That's what God's telling these people. This is a lie and a falsehood. Do not listen to that man walking in the spirit, but lying. It's a lie. Daniel. Oh, teenagers, this is what we're looking for. Do you know why we don't have any Daniels? Because we don't have very many kids who will purpose in their heart. Listen to what it says. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat nor with the wine. Think we could use some Daniels? You don't get Daniels from wine. It doesn't work that way. Listen to what Proverbs tells us. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Now, those are all things that you wish for on your kids, right? I mean, as we're raising our kids, we say, oh, I can't wait to die on their own so they can have woe and sorrow and contention and babbling. I can't wait to watch them and to watch them have to deal with all of these wonderful things. Isn't that our hopes and prayers for our kids? Who hath these things, by the way? Listen to what it says. Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? they that tarry long at the wine, they that go to seek mixed wine. Look not upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. At the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of the mast. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. And when I shall awake, I will seek it yet again. That is what wine does. It creates all kinds of problems. It leaves you feeling lousy. And when, you know what? I know for a fact. I don't know if I am born with some predisposition toward alcohol. I don't know. You know why? I've never tried it. And as long as I end my life that same way, I will never know. You say, well, some people are born alcohol. No. You're not, if you were born with a predisposition toward alcohol, it doesn't mean you're born an alcoholic until you drink. Do you understand? You know how you can keep your kids from being an alcoholic? Don't let them drink. There's never been an alcoholic who didn't drink. Think about it. There's never been a drunk that didn't drink. Think about it. It's not science here. It's not rocket science. It's just logic. Don't drink. And of all of the things that this mother wanted to say to the king of Israel, the very first thing that she wanted to emphasize was, oh, Lemuel, stay away from wine. It is not for kings to drink wine. Well, Mom, if you think your kids are kingly, royal, a part of the royal priesthood, children of the king, then set your goals as high for them as Solomon's mom did for him. Did Solomon abide by his mom's advice? No, he did not. Read the book of Ecclesiastes. And then, when you really want to get discouraged, read the end of Solomon's life. Who, after being made the wisest man on the face of the planet, and that God used in mighty ways, surrendered himself to worship false gods, being led around by women, by the wives that he had married. That's what the Bible says. His mother said, be careful, son, don't give yourselves over to women. Be careful, son, don't give yourself over to wine. And Solomon's reputation was in the toilet when he died. He was useless to the Lord because he surrendered himself. He didn't listen to Mom's advice. So if I can just kind of touch on this, let's go ahead. We're going to try to get down to verse 8. Focus on that first, but we're not done yet. Verse 8 says, or get down to verse 9, open thy mouth for the dumb, in the cause of all such as are appointed to instruction, to destruction, I'm sorry. Open thy mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and the needy. Now, here's the second thing. This is an amazing thing. Now, I'll grant you that Mom was expecting Solomon, great things of Solomon. He was the king. But listen, moms, dads, do not we expect great things of our kids and our grandkids? I told you, I've told you since my kids were small, and now my kids are grown. We raised our kids to prepare them for the ministry. We always figured it this way. God can call people into ministry, and he can call people out of the ministry. So if God didn't want them to be in the ministry, he'd let them know. But we're going to raise them as if they're going to be the next D.L. Moody's and the next Amy Carmichael's. You understand? That's how we're going to raise them. And God doesn't have to call them into ministry. But we're going to raise. Why? Because we had great expectations for what God was going to do with our kids. And that's where Solomon's mom is. And so she's giving him instruction that is great, mighty, powerful instruction. Stay away from wine. And then the next thing she says is to be careful, to be the advocate. The advocate for the poor, for the needy. That's what she says there in verses 8 and 9. Take a look at it. Open thy mouth for the dumb in the cause of all such as are appointed to destruction. When somebody doesn't have a voice, you should step in, Solomon, and be their voice. We say this about child advocates all the time, right? This is what a child advocate is. How is a 3-year-old supposed to defend themselves in court? They can't. So the court appoints them a child advocate, someone who will speak on their behalf, someone who will step in and say, this person needs help. And Solomon's mom says, be that person, Solomon. Be the one who steps in when somebody's in need. Goes on in verse 9, says, open thy mouth and judge righteously and plead the cause of the poor and needy. So she's expecting that God is going to use Solomon in great ways. And Solomon, when the opportunity arises, and it will, and it's already arisen for every single one of us in this room, at least adults, to have the opportunity to step in and plead someone's cause, to step in and make a difference in someone's life who they no longer have a voice, or they no longer have the ability, they're poor and needy, they're unable to speak. Solomon, you be the one to step in. Now, you know, you say, Pastor, I don't plan on being a king. Well, let me tell you, it's too late. Are you a child of the king? Then you already are princes and princesses. You already are a royal priesthood. It's too late to make that decision. You already are a child of the king. And with that comes the responsibility of being a child of the king. And so as Solomon's mom is saying, son, I love you. You're the child of my womb. You're the one that I have given so much for. Please hear me out. Don't give yourself to women. Don't give yourself to wine. And be considerate of those who have less, who are needy, who are poor, who are unable to speak for themselves. You have a chance to make a difference. We, by the way, are given an example of that all of the time, because we ourselves are the dumb one. Dumb meaning unable to speak one. That's us. And we have an advocate with the Father, according to John, 1 John chapter 2, verse 2. We have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ, the righteous. He's our advocate. He steps in, because as we stand before the Father, we're poor and needy and unable to speak. And he steps in and watches over us. What a great example. And he says, this is this mother's advice. Are you ready to listen to mom? I don't know what to tell you. I know it's tough out there. I know that, you know, this abstinence concept as far as alcohol isn't popular. And I'm well aware that there's going to be 1,000 verses somebody's going to show you, and you're going to say, you know what? That's a hard verse for me to explain. But this I know. It's not given for kings to drink wine. And this I know, wine is a mocker and strong drink is raging. And this I know, that those that follow after wine lose their money, are not rich. These things I know. And so don't get caught up in the argument. It doesn't make any sense. Don't get caught up in that argument. You throw these verses back at them. You explain this one. What does this mean to you and your wine? You understand? That's the way to deal with this. I'm just telling you, it's an expectation that if you're in leadership here, you're not drinking. Because it's an expectation from God, not from this pastor. That's the expectation. You say, oh, I don't like it. Well, so what? I mean, when did God start, you know, running his business through us? That doesn't happen that way. It's not the way it works. And I know that if you're not drinking, you'll be the best Sunday school teacher, the best deacon, the best children's church worker. And if you are drinking, it's going to make your judgment poor and weak. And one of these times, it's going to be one of our kids standing in front of your car in the middle of children's church, and your judgment's impaired. And that's not going to work. It's not going to work. Say, well, Pastor, what if it's okay to drink wine? You know what? I am completely content to stand before God one day and listen to God say, John, you know what? You could have had wine. Because there's no place in the Bible that commands me to drink it. It's not like I'm violating any of God's command, right? So you say, I don't like your definition. Well, fine. But I'm completely content with standing in front of God and saying, I preach this to the church. Because there's so much in the Bible that warns us about the dangers of wine, at least wine as it's used in that kind of a beverage. The only kind time that wine is used that is not like juice in the Bible is medicinal. Give it to the person who's dying, a little wine for your stomach's sake. And if life has just beat you down and you can't handle it, it's medicinal. It's medicinal, not recreational, medicinal. And for most medicines, you know, you take them and then you get better and you stop taking them. It's medicinal. And nowadays, we have medicines that don't require us to take. You know, you can chew a tablet for your stomach, and you can, you know, there's all kinds of other things. And if you're dying, we can give you whatever those drugs were you guys were talking about a minute ago. And you know, there's all kinds of other things, and we don't have to use because it's medicinal. All right, heads bowed, eyes closed, please.